You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Ford,
Corey Doctorow,
Brent Simpson,
Robin Mock,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is...
Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I am super excited to have Rick Riordan on the show with me today. His brand new book, The Trials of Apollo, book 5 in the Tower of Nero series is out, available everywhere now. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm excited to have you, Rick. We begin each show with the same question. And that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
Ah, well, that's a good place to begin for sure. I think probably when I was in eighth grade. By that time, I had read The Lord of the Rings, which was sort of my gateway into the love of reading. I was a latecomer to that. And that was also the year that I had a wonderful teacher who introduced me to Greek and also Norse mythology. She read a story that I had written as a classroom assignment and encouraged me to actually submit it to magazines to see if I could get it published. I had really never given that any thought or even thought that that was something that a kid like me could do. But that was my first sense that, hey, maybe this is something I wanted to explore.
I find it fascinating that that your gateway drug, as it were, was was Tolkien. For so many people, Tolkien or Lewis or some of these fantasy stories really bring us into the love of reading and the love of knowing that stories can transcend time and place. What do you think it is about these types of stories, these fantastical stories, maybe even, stories rooted in myth and, and these older tales? What is it about us as humans that love these kinds of stories?
Well, I think they provide us a distant mirror. It's a mirror that allows us to see things about ourselves that would be perhaps too uncomfortable to acknowledge in a more realistic story. The Greek gods, for instance, are very powerful, but they're also incredibly flawed. They are, in a way, the human experience writ large. So we can look at them from a safe distance, not feel threatened. We can even laugh at them when they get into trouble or say, oh boy, you know, I would never do that. But they are acting out on a very huge canvas a lot of the things that humans deal with, like what does it mean to be in a family? What do you owe your family? What does it mean to be courageous? And when do you have to stand up and when do you not? What does love mean? These are big questions, and they're explored in fantasy in a way that makes them a little more accessible.
Rick, you worked as a teacher, as an educator. What was it that drew you to that profession?
Well, I mentioned that really my first foray into writing was because I had a great teacher. And I don't think it's any accident that after that sort of formative experience in my middle school years, I later became a middle school teacher. There is something that is absolutely invaluable about having that one teacher or those few teachers who really get you and understand and see you that can completely change a child's life. That happened for me, and that's happened for countless of other people that I've talked to. There's always that one or, hopefully more than one that really makes a difference for you. And I wanted to be that person, if I could, for the kids in the middle grades. I struggled in middle school myself. It's a terrible time for a lot of people. You're changing in every way you possible can, and it's difficult to know where you fit. I have a lot of sympathy for that age group, And so the chance to go back and be a teacher there and hopefully change lives a little bit for the better was very appealing to me.
Well, and as a creative person, as a writer, it's funny to me because I ask people this all the time. We've done nearly 1,000 episodes of the show, and I ask people all the time if there was an adult, maybe a teacher or a parent, who recognized that storytelling gene, if you will, in a kid and offered encouragement, because the days of a writer can be lonely, and you sit in a room or an office all by yourself making up stories about people that live in your head. And, you know, those can be very dark and trying times. But invariably, we pull back to those times where someone recognized the gift and encouraged us. And that can go a long, long way to helping people get through the tough times of a creative life.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, there may be writers out there who haven't had that experience and have persevered anyway. And that's, you know, that's admirable in its own right. But you know, most of the people I have talked to that turned out to be writers can point back to somebody who made that discovery, or at least acknowledged, you know, you really are good at this. You should consider doing this.
So before Percy Jackson came into your life and became the series that launched all of the amazing Rick Riordan stuff that we have at our fingertips, you published quite a number of mystery thrillers for the adult market. Talk a little bit about how you got started there, and what was the motivation for you to write that first novel?
Right. Well, after my middle school years, and, you know, obviously not getting published during that, and learning the hard way that rejection is something that you have to work through, I let it lie fallow for a while, the writing idea, but came back to it when I became a teacher. And even though my students were telling me I should probably write for them because they enjoyed the stories I would tell them in class, I didn't really have the story in my head that I wanted to tell them. I wasn't ready to make that connection yet. Instead, I started writing the mystery novels because that was my own sort of go-to for pleasure reading. I was reading Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett and the sort of the classic American noir hard-boiled novels. I really enjoy those. And so I tried my hand at writing that kind of novel set in modern Texas, San Antonio, which is my hometown. So, I mean, there was a lot of things that recommended that genre to me, and I felt like I knew the genre, and I definitely enjoyed it. And I wrote 7 novels of that type that were published and you know, did fairly well. But all of that time, I was still a full-time middle school teacher as well. It never really occurred to me to try to mold my two worlds, the middle school teaching and the writing, until that moment of Percy Jackson, when suddenly there was the synchronicity and they came together and it worked out, you know, to my advantage, fortunately.
I think I've heard in the past, Rick, you talking about the genesis of the Percy Jackson series. And did it have to do with one of your sons and Alexia? How did that fuel what we now hold in our hand?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. It was my older son. He was having a tough time in elementary school. He was diagnosed with ADHD and dyslexia. He was struggling with his grades and not feeling very good about himself. The only thing he did enjoy that year in school was a unit on Greek mythology. Well, that was something I related to. I taught it for many years and I enjoyed it myself. So to keep his spirits up, I started telling him bedtime stories from Greek myths. Eventually, that morphed into an original myth of Percy Jackson. I created a kid, modern day boy, who discovers he has ADHD and dyslexia, like my son. But in Percy's world, those are indicators that you are probably a demigod. One of your parents is a Greek god. That resonated really strongly with my son. He told me to write it down, and that's how Percy Jackson was born.
as a kid who struggled with dyslexia, I can remember how frustrating it was for things to just click with other students. And with me, it was an uphill battle. If I would have had a book series that offered that sort of encouragement, you know, that this was a superpower, not a learning disability, that would have changed my life. I can only imagine that when you published that story and started getting feedback from other people, what was it like for you to, you know, this was something that you shared with your son, and now it's connecting with more and more readers. What was that feedback like for you?
Well, that's by far the most gratifying thing about this turn I've taken as a children's writer, is hearing from young people that they feel seen, they feel valued, they read the books, and it makes them feel good about who they are and what they can do. You know, when I get feedback like that, I mean, that's, I couldn't ask for anything better than that.
So as a writer who said that your influences were Raymond Chandler and you know, the mystery series like that, did you, you know, and then having written several of those novels beforehand, when you started writing for middle graders and young adults, did some of those influences and loves from mystery start seeping into this work that you're doing now?
Oh, sure. It was actually great practice for writing for middle school. The idea of the snarky first person narrator, which Percy is, I mean, that is straight out of the Private Eye genre. And at the time, it really wasn't something that you saw in middle grade fiction. Nobody was doing that. It was all third person. And so some people were saying, well, you can't do that. You can't have a first person middle school narrator. But, you know, of course, it made the voice very immediate and relatable to the kids. So that definitely followed through. And of course, the structure of mysteries are very tight. You keep the pages turning. You are unveiling the clues and the evidence in a way that keeps readers both puzzled, but at the same time engaged in the hunt for the truth. So that was also very helpful for me.
So you made up the story of a demigod who had these certain abilities that were indicators that he was something special. When you're going through this this story with your son, and then realizing that, okay, maybe this has legs to it. When did you decide to write that down? And did you have any you know, ideas about getting published and how this might go out to the greater world?
Well, I told it to him over the course of maybe three nights, and I really was simply making it up off the top of my head. But he liked it so much that, you know, he encouraged me to write it down. And so after thinking about that for a while, I said, okay, you know, I think maybe there is something here. This idea seems to be helpful to him, and I can see how it might be something my own students would enjoy. So at that point, it started to snowball, and it really was a fairly quick write. Even though I was teaching full-time and still writing the mystery novels, I still found time to do the Lightning Thief manuscript. I think I had it finished in about a year. And so, yeah, it was something that fairly quickly it became clear to me that I needed to try to find a home for this.
How quickly did you realize that the Lightning Thief was not all of this story? I know that you said pretty quickly you realized that this was going to be a 5-book series. Mm-hmm. Did you have plans for that from the beginning? Did you know it was going to grow to be, you know, a full series that then spawned other series?
Well, I didn't know the extent to which I would be able to sort of get into it and how it would sort of unfold and lead to other stories that would spawn other stories. I mean, I had no idea. I did know that I wanted to do a series simply because, as a reader, I prefer series myself. I like to get invested in the characters and then know there's another episode, if you will, that I can pick up and read. Standalones are great, and I love them, but they do seem like, well, okay, you know, I got to know these characters, I read all this, I loved it, and now it's done, and there's no more, and that always made me sad. So I wanted the five books. Looking back on it, this is funny, but at the time I thought, oh yeah, sure, five books. I will be able to do pretty much everything about Greek mythology in a five-book series. And of course, I was wrong. There are tons of stories that I wasn't able to get into the original series. And fortunately for me, there was lots and lots more material for the follow-up books.
Papyrus Author was designed and developed with the modern writer's needs, wishes, and preferences in mind. From big structures right down to tiny details, every single feature of our software has been carefully and meticulously crafted in collaboration with authors. Take charge of your writing with the author interface, which gives you access to different elements of your story, such as characters, backgrounds, and narrative structure. Move sections of your writing seamlessly in the navigator and evaluate the complexity of your text with our expert style and readability analysis. Never worry about losing progress with automated backups. With Papyrus Author, you can be your own writer, editor, and publisher. The world of writing is about to change. Papyrus Author, the word processor for authors, has arrived on the international stage, unrivaled in its scope. It is the first software suite to unite every single step of creative writing. The vision behind Papyrus Author is to empower everyone with an idea to turn it into a great book for free. A word processing core that matured for over 10 years at its foundation, Papyrus Author goes beyond the text with its intuitive organizing layers for story, characters, notes, and research. The powerful style and readability analysis help raise manuscript quality. The inbuilt publication capabilities take the book directly to the reader with ebooks, DocX, and print-ready PDF. Visit papyrusauthor.com to get started today. Authors, I have a fantastic new service to tell you about. It's called PubSite. PubSite is a service to help you build your very own website, your home on the web, where you can promote your work and give your fans a place to connect with you. PubSite is a website platform that allows every author, regardless of budget, to have a great-looking professional website, developed by the book marketing professionals at FSB Associates. PubSite is the new, easy-to-use DIY website builder developed specifically for books and authors. Whether you're an author of one book or 20, or a small publisher, PubSite allows you to build, design, and most importantly, update your website pain-free. No need to be dependent on a designer or webmaster to make a small but costly change to your website. Save the money and do it yourself. PubSite is the best platform for authors because it's a book-centric platform. PubSite was built just for authors and small publishers. Every design, feature, and layout is book-centric. They have customized designs for you to use. It's easy to build. No coding or HTML is necessary to create a stunning, professional-looking website with all the features you want. Get a custom domain name, yourname.com. It's simple to update. You can add all of your books, add a blog and a book tour, sell from any retailer, manage your email list and social media, and even do e-commerce. Build your website with a 14-day free trial, then pay just $19.99 per month, which includes hosting. And we offer packages starting at $499 to set up the website for you. Pub-site.com, the place to help authors find their home on the web. So, Rick, when first series ended and you have a fully formed series, did you start realizing pretty quickly that this could be an interconnected world and that this one aspect of mythology might actually be connected in some way, or could you find ways to connect these different views from different places in the world? And kind of how did you start building out the greater world?
Right. Well, I wanted the Percy Jackson series to stand on its own as a five-book series. But by the time I was on, say, book four, it was becoming clear to me, okay, there's a whole lot more here that would be fun to write about. What about the Roman aspects of the gods? What happens if you're a demigod, but your dad or mom is Roman? And so I got the idea about that time to sort of plant the seed for a second series. And in, at the end of Percy Jackson, there's a prophecy that sort of leapfrogs into the next series, The Heroes of Olympus. You can stop after book five of Percy, and that's fine. It's a complete story. But there is more. And as I was writing that series, The Heroes of Olympus, again, questions come to mind, and that's where most of my books come from. Well, geez, what about Egyptian mythology? You know, what would that be like? Do they have demigods? What would they be doing in the modern world? Is it possible that different pantheons could exist side by side? And out of that came the Cain Chronicles. So yes, I mean, one thing just sort of evolved into another.
When you started looking at the different mythologies from around the world, were there things about them that surprised you? Like, I think you were pretty well versed in Greek mythology. I know that you taught that. But as you started digging into mythologies from other lands, were there similarities between them, or were there things that you learned surprised you?
Yes, I mean, it's both surprising to me, I guess, how fabulously different people can look at the world and differently, and how the mythologies can be different. But it's also surprising how many similar patterns, how many archetypes are really very, very much the same, no matter whether you're talking about ancient China or ancient Greece or Mesoamerica. There seem to be these fundamental ideas that come up over and over and over again when you're dealing with mythology. So that was fascinating to me. I guess the biggest revelation I got from studying world mythology is that some of these mythologies really weren't mine to tell. Fans always ask me, you know, would you write about Chinese mythology? Would you write about Aztec mythology? And although I love those stories, I'm not an expert, and I'm not from the culture where that was something that I grew up with. And so that was something that took me a while to realize. It may seem obvious, but to both respect and admire, but not to try to mine into that information.
We've had a number of authors that are now writing series in the Rick Riordan Presents series and doing some fantastic work there. That had to be exciting for you to when you realize there are other stories to be told out there, maybe not by me, but it had to be exciting for you to build this thing and let other people come in and tell their side of it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's where the idea for the Rick Riordan Presents imprint came from, is one, Disney saying, would you ever want to do a publishing imprint with us? And my realization that fans were very interested in having middle grade adventures like I was writing, but with other mythologies. And that there were lots of great own voices authors out there who were already doing this or who wanted to do this sort of work, and simply needed the opportunity and the platform. So to be able to take the spotlight and turn it on them and take these wonderful books and say, if you like Percy Jackson, this is not Percy Jackson, but I can pretty safely tell you that you're going to love these books too, because they have the humor, they have the action, they have the mythology. The response has just been amazing from the book community, from librarians, teachers, parents, kids. The imprint has taken on a life of its own, and it has been probably the most gratifying thing I've ever done in the publishing world.
Rick, when you're dealing with a mythology, these stories are, you know, as old as time, it seems like, and have a set the rules of the stories are set already, but you're telling stories that put a new twist on these. When you're planning out a new series, and the book that we're talking about today, The Tower of Nero, Book 5 in the Trials of Apollo, when you're dealing with these mythologies and these characters, how do you start planning out a series? And are you a big planner? Do you like to have an overarching blueprint before you start writing, or kind of what's your process for getting in and working with the existing material?
Sure. And, you've had 1,000 conversations with authors. I'm sure you've heard 1,000 takes, because everyone's process is a little different.
Yes.
And that's the only constant, really, is as a writer, you have to find what works best for you. And that can be a process in itself. I am a kind of a hybrid. I do outline, but my outlines are not terribly detailed. Usually just a couple of sentences for a chapter. I'll spend maybe a month or 2 months planning, thinking, researching, rereading the myths. Which themes do I want to explore from what myth? Which locations do I want to feature? What monsters do I want to talk about? That kind of thing. And how does it all go together with the story that I want to tell? Then I will do a very sort of brief and sketchy outline, just enough to get me started. At that point, I will sit down and I'll write the first draft without stopping. Usually takes me about 2 months, maybe a little more. I will not allow myself to go back and look or revise. After the first draft is completely done, then I'll go back and I'll revise to my heart's content.
Is that a difficult thing for you to do when you say, I don't allow myself to go back and revise? Is that something that you have to concentrate on, or are you someone who would like to go back and fiddle with things and, kind of get caught up in the minutia of it?
Yes. And that's the operative word, getting caught up. I mean, I think that I could tinker endlessly and I would never make the first chapter perfect and then feel, okay, I can now go on to chapter 2. I would simply make it different, and then I would create new problems. And that's something I've heard from a lot of writers. A lot of us have notebooks full of half-finished stories because we just got into it and tried to revise it going along and weren't satisfied and just decided, oh, this is too hard. I'll try another shiny new idea, and that'll be easier. And of course, it wasn't any easier. So for me, the solution is to just write the whole thing out, let it be terrible. That's part of the deal. Don't worry about it. And then once you're done, then you can go back and at least you have a finished manuscript.
Rick, I notice sitting beside you there is an acoustic guitar. Do you ever find yourself when you're drafting and you're just stuck and just don't, you don't know what happens next and you just need, does the guitar offer a little creative break to allow your mind to go? I know different creative people have different outlets and expressions and things that help them to focus on something else for a moment. Are there things like that in your life that help you to shift gears?
Sure. Music is definitely one of those. I'm not very good at the guitar, but I do enjoy it. There was a time in college where, I toyed with music as a career and played in a band. And, I guess I look at the guitar now and I think, well, at least I didn't fail at that. That could have been real bad. But sure, I enjoy picking it up and it is a nice release just to be able to strum a few chords. And reading is another great escape, and travel. I think those are my three biggies: music, reading, and travel. That all play into my writing and inform my writing, but also allow a nice sort of outlet.
The new book, The Tower of Nero, is book 5 in the Trials of Apollo series. What was your main focus for this series, and what brought this series alive to you?
Well, I think the arc for Apollo was about Apollo becoming human. And in an interesting way, he, I think, has the most dramatic growth of any narrator I've ever written about, which is not something you might expect from a 4,000-year-old deity. We think of deities as being fairly static. They're immortal and they never change. But in Apollo's case, he's so used to being powerful and, you know, talented and handsome and, you know, just basically everything's easy for him. To become a 16-year-old awkward teen was quite a come down. So it was interesting to me to see him learn how to come to terms with his new identity and to learn that maybe being human wasn't the worst thing. Maybe, in fact, he had something to learn from humans. So that was very interesting and very appealing to me.
Well, with the with this being book five in this series, does this close out the Trials of Apollo?
It does. And it, in fact, I think closes out Percy Jackson's world, at least the large arc. It's possible that I will go back and do some standalone novels about this character or that character. But I think this is a good place to leave things. I think we are finally sailing off into the sunset. I hope that I've left everything pretty well resolved with the various characters that readers have come to love over the years.
So you mentioned that you might write some standalone books. What's at the front of your mind now? Are you still thinking about new ways to explore mythology? Are you thinking about mysteries? What things are exciting you now? Now that you can shift your focus a little bit.
Well, I've done a lot of reading recently on Celtic mythology, especially Irish myth, which is my own ancestral background, and I've never actually written anything about it. So that's on the front burner. I definitely would like to do something with that. And there are other projects as well that aren't quite as far along, but I'm looking forward to a lot of them as well. It'll be nice to just do some standalones and be able to pivot from one thing to another.
Excellent. Well, the new book, The Tower of Nero, Book 5 and the Trials of Apollo, is out everywhere now. We're going to put links to it in the show notes of this episode to make it easy for people to find. Rick, if people are just discovering you because maybe they've been living under a rock or in a cave or something, where can they find you online to dig into all the amazing stuff that you do?
Yeah, Disney actually has a great website for me called Reed Riordan, readriordan.com. And it's got everything on the imprint and my books and a whole bunch of stuff for teachers and parents, too.
Excellent. We're going to send everyone to see you. Rick, this has been so much fun. Thank you for taking time to come on the show today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Do you want to get paid to write stories? Do you enjoy collaborating with other talented storytellers? Do you want to work completely remotely and set your own hours? Relay Publishing is looking for writers and editors to work on fiction projects across a range of genres, from thrillers to sci-fi, fantasy, and romance. The Relay process is extremely collaborative, in the same vein as a TV show's writer's room. If you're a story geek, then you'll be on a great team. There are 7 ghostwriting positions and 10 editing positions currently available. Please go to www.recruitment.relaypub.com. That's www.recruitment.relaypub.com for more information on how to apply. Join a great storytelling team today. What Death Taught Terrence by Derek McFadden. Life is a journey. So is the afterlife. At the end of his life, Terrence McDonald must discover its meaning or he'll be banned from the afterlife forever and his soul will cease to exist. Join Terrence and those who love him on a poignant and unforgettable journey through a life at once wonderful and harrowing. Learn what Terrence learned. See what Terrence sees. By this provocative story's end, readers may even learn a thing or two about themselves. See why people are saying things like, Derek McFadden writes with an insight you can match. If you like the works of Mitch Albom, I think you'll find What Death Taught Terrence a worthy addition to your library, and the reading of it a life-affirming journey. I found the story immediately immersive, and it stuck with me long after I finished. What Death Taught Terrence by Derek McFadden, on sale now. Invasion Day, the first book in the They Came for Blood series by Scott Moon. David Osage is a dangerous man with a complicated past, but these days he's just trying to keep his head down, driving big rigs. One night he saddles himself with a hitchhiker, a nuisance who's more than she seemed, and that's when everything changes. No one was ready for an alien invasion. Death is raining from the sky, and the only questions left is, do you run, fight, or submit? For David Osage and his family, answering is as easy as giving the alien invaders the finger. Grab Book 1, Invasion Day, in the They Came for Blood series, and then follow it up with Book 2, Resistance Day, and Book 3, Victory Day. Available at Amazon.com.